This is Mike Ball, the author of Banjos, Boats, and Butt Dialing, and you're listening to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome, welcome, goddammit. Hello, this is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and we are going to have a ball. Oh, and I mean that in either the amusing way or the testicular way. I mean, we're going to have a joyful time talking to a man named Mike Ball. He is an author. He writes a syndicated humor column for a bunch of different places. He's the winner of an Irma Bombeck Award for his writing. He is also in a band called Dr. Mike and the Sea Monkeys. Love that name. And he also works with kids who have problems. Who doesn't? So, will you please welcome the multi-talented and the very verbal Mike Ball. Shalom, Mike.
Shalom, Rabbi Solomon.
Most important question, Mike. Are you Jewish?
No, I'm not.
God damn it, no.
I'm second to you guys on the guilt scale. I'm Catholic.
Oh, you're Catholic. Are you a practicing Catholic, or have you perfected it?
I am a recovering Catholic.
So let's go there. Did a priest ever touch you in a bad way?
Oh, not a bad way. I mean, you know, it depends on your point of view.
And did they ever whack you with rulers or do the knuckle thing?
Oh, yeah. They didn't use rulers. They had the little round hickory pointer things. The nuns, that was awesome stuff. They could cripple you. I couldn't use my left hand for almost 8 years.
Now, wait a minute. Is this really us getting away from the comedy? Did they really still use the hickory things on your knuckles and your butt?
Well, yeah, that was back in the 1950s.
Wait, how old are you?
Yeah, they sure did. I'm 62 years old.
62 or 52?
62.
Oh, my God. Oh, Mitmazel. So you're a member of AARPC, the Retired Persons Who Are Catholic thing.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that you were. So you do remember the age of the nuns and the priests and the whatever. But I like to be ecumenical. I like to be loving to all my brethren of other religions, even though mentally it's impossible for me to do so. So what is your happiest memory of religious school?
Probably my happiest memory is when I was a kid, my friends in Mass, my friend's younger brother was sitting with us, and he was watching. Back then, the Mass was still in Latin, and the priest was up there chanting and gesticulating and holding food up, and this kid said, loudly enough that everybody in the church could say, he said, you know, I've been coming to this church all my life, and that guy has not found the right recipe in that book yet.
That's actually really, really good. That's
the essence
funny.
Of being Catholic in the 50s.
Did he grow up to be George Carlin? That's very good. So, did all of that training in the Catholic school and being a good, did that prepare you in any way for being a writer?
It prepared me to wallow in my guilt. Cool. And then to try to make good. So that's what we did. Yeah, it did. I think all of these things make you sort of think things over and write them down, and so people will ignore them. If you write them in a language they don't understand, it really works better.
It does, doesn't it? I do everything in Hebrew.
Yes.
Just because nobody I know speaks Hebrew. So they think I'm writing the most brilliant sermons in the world, and I know what they are, but they don't. So I can fake it really well. It's good.
You sound really wise that way.
Thank you. Exactly. Now, what wisdom did you accumulate in college? Did you go for liberal arts? Did you go for writing or a total different career?
I actually went to school to be a scientist.
Oh.
And I discovered that science is really, really boring. So it took me 7 years to find that out. So I tore up my PhD thesis and wandered off to become a commie fag junkie writer.
Now, whoa, hold on. Did you actually not... You were in the middle of your PhD and you didn't finish?
That's correct.
Oh, my God. Why didn't you just take a couple more months and get it done, have it, and then become a commie junkie fagula?
Well, it's just... long story, but I just decided it wasn't a life for me and that I'd have myself trapped in it. So remember that guilt thing. So I decided that I really better wander off and play my guitar in bars and write stupid sophomore jokes for a living.
Right on! God damn it. Now wait, this would have been the late 1960s-ish or when?
Yes. Yep, 1969. About 1970 is when I hit the 73
wait a minute. Were you? Are you in Minnesota, Milwaukee? Where the hell were you at this point?
I was in South Bend, Indiana.
Oh, Indiana. Oh. Did you ever get to New York and do that circuit where the folk boom? Well, that was the late 60s. Was already the boom was kind of over and into rock and roll. So, what circuit did you do?
I was doing coffee houses, whatever. I was a rock and roller in the 60s. So I really, when I went off to college, is when I started becoming a folk singer. And you know, the interesting thing about that is I was studying. I was trying to learn guitar licks. Played by a guy named Josh White Jr. His dad wrote the version of House of the Rising Sun that we're aware of.
And what was his dad's name?
Josh White.
Okay. Yes.
Joshua White. Josh White was brilliant. He played with the Weavers. He played with Woody Guthrie. Josh Jr. was hanging out with my idols, Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger and Peter Palmieri and all those guys.
Yes.
40 years later, Josh has become one of my best friends. He works with me in a program called Lost Voices, where we do songwriting workshops with kids that are locked up.
Whoa. Well, all right. So let's jump to that. I was going to save that stuff till later, but since you brought it up, Mike Ball, this is a lost boy. Did he start it and you got into it with him?
Actually, I started it, and I found his phone number. I'm in a thing called the Touring Artist Directory here in Michigan, and I was going through the Touring Artist Directory, and I saw, here's Josh White Jr. He lives in Michigan. So I called him, and I started the program. I went out for Career Day to talk to kids about what it's like to make your living writing sophomore jokes, and discovered a whole new world of children that need help. So I called Josh up, and this is about 8 years ago. We've been doing it ever since. We've been going in and writing songs with these kids, helping them perform them, and so hopefully planting little seeds that will help change their lives.
So you're kind of the opposite of scared straight. You go into schools or incarceration facilities, and instead of screaming at them and cursing at them, you have them sit down and write songs full of screams and curses.
That's it. There you go. You hit it on the first try.
Wow. What is fulfilling about this for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's, well, anytime you can change the world, even if it's just a tiny little bit, it means something. And when you deal with one of these young people, that, you know, they're no different from our own kids.
My kids are rotten to the core, so I believe it.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean it that way, but yeah, you're right. They're children just like ours. They're just on a different path, hopefully, than our kids are. And when you deal with them, they're pretty transparent. They got BS detectors that are 10 miles high. They know they're smart. They're just kids that have gotten in trouble. They've done bad things. So if you can help them clarify things, get their heads together just a little bit, and you can watch it happen. It's been pretty cool. That's it's the neatest thing I've ever been involved in.
Now, are they in juvenile facilities? Are they in prisons? Where are these kids?
They're in juvenile detention facilities, yeah.
So eventually they come out into the real world.
Eventually they will, yeah. Yeah, and that's, some of them have dealt with kids as young as 11 years old. Murderers and rapists and drug dealers. And,
oh, yeah. Oh, my favorite kind of people.
yeah, they're actually pretty interesting people.
I'm sure they are. No, but to be honest, I mean, murder might have some different ramifications. It might be in a gang, or it might be a crime of passion. But I mean, how do you even want to work with a rapist?
You know, I don't. It's not my job to pass judgment on what they did. All I'm trying to do, I figure they're eventually going to come back out in the world, and we got a chance to sort of contact them. Kids, you can get through to. Adults, you and me, we're hopeless. We're what we're going to be.
Oh, forget it. But yeah. I mean, aren't you afraid? Like, you have a, you know, you're 62 years old, but you're in good shape. You have a cute ass. I've seen it. You have a very cute ass. Aren't you afraid one of these rapists will come back? Now they've been in prison, or they're juvenile prison. They probably had homosexual rape. Are you afraid they'll come after you?
Nah, I don't really. You can't live in fear. If it happens, it happens. But I don't think so. I think the transaction with these kids, they're not evil. They're just wrong. They've just gone wrong. And
Have you ever met an evil kid?
Well, I met a couple who were really so far out that, that they were just, they took your breath away. And so, yeah, you know, I got to say, it's like Will Rogers, I never met a man I didn't like. I don't know that I've ever met a truly evil kid. I've met kids that have done evil things.
Well, sure.
And you know, and I think there's an important difference there. And they may do evil things. You know, most of these kids are not going to be, they're not going to be acolytes. They're going to be in trouble most of their lives. What we can do, all we can do, hopefully, is change them a little bit. So someday when they're pointing a gun, they won't pull the trigger or whatever it is, because they have just a little germ of self-worth that they didn't have before. And some of them will turn around. Some of these kids will, you know, it'll be the spark. I think every one of us has had moments when somebody said or did something to us that changed our lives for the better. And it might not have been anybody that important to us, but they just planted a seed there that grew for
could
years.
Be. You never know. You know, it might be a kid out there, you know, he's got the gun, he's going to do a holdup, but he's not very confident with his aim. And after taking your courses, he's like, oh, you know, if I right between that guy's eyes, I think I can do this. No, I'm kidding. We're talking with Mike Ball. He is a writer. He's also a songwriter, and he's also a musician. And you're still doing music out of these institutional facilities as well. You're in a band, right?
Yes, indeed. I am in Dr. Mike and the Sea Monkeys.
Dr. Mike and the Sea Monkeys. What kind of band is this?
Well, we're a two-man trio, generally. Dr. Mike is an advice columnist who never actually shows up for gigs or practices because he's a fictional character. He's an asshole. Never shows up.
Yeah,
you know how that is. So it's just me and the other sea monkey, a guy named Scott Clouser. We're a two-man trio, and we do folk music and blues and mostly stuff that's based on my column.
Oh, so it's original songs mostly that then you develop out of the things that you write.
That is correct.
So what are some examples of songs that you've written based on columns?
Well, we've got a heartfelt Christmas song called Carlson the Pissed Off Angel.
Carlson the Pissed Off Angel, I like this.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the colonoscopy song. My most requested song is the colonoscopy song.
I'm not surprised at this. Now, what made you write the colonoscopy column and the colonoscopy song?
Well, strangely enough, I had a colonoscopy, and I found the experience to be...
sexually arousing? What?
Yeah, it was actually really nice. I got flowers, I got taken out to dinner. I lived in fear of this thing for years, and finally... the doctor talked me into having it done, and turns out the drugs are so fantastic in this whole experience that it's just like, okay, that's worth it just for the high.
You know? Oh my goodness! Well, wait. All right, let's take this slowly because I am interested in all things tuchus, considering the condition of my prostate. So finally, your darling wife convinced you get it looked at. So you go. It's an overnight thing, right? Do you have to stay in the hospital?
No, you just, you stay at home and you drink this stuff that makes you just sort of explode.
It's
like a fire hose. And you drink a gallon of this stuff.
It's not barium, is it? What is it?
No, it's, I don't know what it is. It's something that just, it cleans your system out. You want to be squeaky clean in there because they don't want no mess in the tuchus.
That's right, Mary. No mess in the tuchus. I'll bet it's probably cold borscht. That does it for me.
Yeah, that comes from my scientific days. No mess in the tuchus. That's...
So you drink a gallon of this borscht-y stuff and...
Yep. And you expel it at high velocity for hours. And then you go in. And then this nurse, there's always just a gorgeous nurse that if you were 20 years younger, you'd be getting her phone number.
Oh, yeah.
And she makes you put on a little paper apron and sticks an IV in your arm and gets you really high.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, that's, you know, that's an upside. That's really better than the alternative at my stage.
Well, yeah, that's true. So you get the IV, and once the IV goes in, everything else should be painless, no?
Oh, yeah. You don't feel a thing. Now, I stayed awake. I've heard from people who apparently don't remember anything. I remember all of it. I was in there watching this little TV. It was fantastic. The doctor's just going around corners and exploring this little cave, and I was chatting with everybody and singing, you know, working in a coal mine.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh, So you were, even though you were a little loopy, you were compos mentis, though.
I was as compos mentis as I ever am.
Fair enough. So, and working out, that's funny, when they're digging your tuchus there. And how long did the procedure take?
I have no idea. It was very long and pleasant, and the doctor at one point did have to tell me to shut up so he could concentrate, because I was asking so many questions and chatting and having a good time. And I had the nurses giggling, and it was very fun. And, the after effects, the drugs are so cool. They tell you that you really shouldn't plan on making any major decisions during the day after your colonoscopy.
Right.
These drugs are so good. On the way home, I was trying to buy my wife a helicopter.
That's funny.
Like, honey, if we just had a chopper, you could be to work in 3 minutes flat. That'd be perfect. So fortunately, she turned me down. She did get a diamond bracelet out of it, but...
Good Lord! Yeah, but where did you hide it, and where did she have to pull it out of?
Well, that's between us.
Yeah, well, so did your tushy hurt the day or two after?
No, I never felt a thing.
Really? That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That is so nice.
The great thing about this is I got, after the column came out, about 6 weeks later, I got an email from a reader in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And, the
Why well, they go down under all the time.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. The subject was, you saved my husband's life. Okay, I write sophomore jokes. I don't save lives. What's this all about? And she said, her husband had refused to get his colonoscopy. The doctor was trying to get him to get. He read the column. She said he picked himself up off the floor laughing and dialed the doctor and got his colonoscopy. They found cancer. He's going to be fine. Like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
That's mid-muzzle. So, and that was what your column was, just the experience. How did you turn that into a song?
Well, it's pretty much that. I just told the story.
Okay.
I'm actually doing the song. But maybe we can get you a copy of the song that you could queue up.
That would be lovely. Why don't we listen to Mike Ball... And is this just you, or is this you and your sea monkey people?
That would be me and the sea monkey people. And I think we might have Mad Cat Ruth, the harmonica player.
Oh, nice.
Involved in this one, too.
So there will be blowing and singing up the tuchus in this colonoscopy song from Mike Ball, Dr. Mike, and the sea monkeys. Achat, shtayim, shalosh. Welcome back to the Dave's Gone By radio program. This is Rabbi Sol Solomon talking with the man who writes columns, writes songs, works with kids to help them write songs. What else do you do in your life, Mike Ball?
Oh, that's most of it. I used to be a water skier, but that's all gone by now that I'm an old man.
Now, wait a minute. You were not a professional, but you were sort of an amateur athletic, serious water skier?
I was actually an indoor world pairs water skiing champion.
Wait, who the hell does this indoors?
Oh, it's really great. I was a pairs water skier. I skied around with a girl up in the air, flipping her around over my head. And
we had
an indoor championship. It was actually the most challenging thing we did. I was a 2002 national champion before I hung up the skis. But this indoor one is done on dry land, indoors.
Wait a minute, It's not even done on water?
Well, the indoor championship isn't, no.
Wait a minute, so how the hell do you stand on a ski? What the hell are you talking about?
I know, this is really pretty weird. You just do it on stage. If you shuffle your feet, it counts as a fall. So you have to do all the moves with the girl, and it's actually more technical than doing it on skis. It's actually pretty easy on skis once you get the hang of doing it. Indoors, with the judges 10 feet from you, it's a lot more technical.
So wait a minute, you're not even wearing skis in the indoor water skis.
The outdoors we did. The national championship was done on water skis.
Yeah, I get that. I'm trying to get this indoor thing here. So you're basically wearing sneakers.
Yes.
And there's a woman on top of you, and you're flipping her around, and this is supposed to be water skiing.
That's correct.
Is this an Olympic sport of some sort?
We always held out hope that it someday will be, and it may be.
Maybe in Poland? What the hell kind of sport is this?
It's very similar to pairs figure skating.
Pairs,
except there's a lot less Russian mafia involvement.
Now, here's another question. You came from Indiana. I think you're living, in Minnesota now. Where the hell were you water skiing? Did you go to the West Coast for a period of time during your heyday?
No, there's a lot of water skiing and ski shows in the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah. It started, water skiing started in Wisconsin, in the Dells, in Wisconsin. So most of the skiers, now we skied at Cypress Gardens, and in fact won a championship down at Cypress Gardens. And most of the skiers down there come from the Midwest. They grow up in Wisconsin or Michigan or Minnesota. They go down to Florida or SeaWorld or wherever and ski there.
Well, what does it take to be a good water skier?
Stupidity.
Okay, besides that.
Besides that. I don't know. I think you need a sense of balance and not be afraid of the water. The type of skiing we did, this show water skiing, the skiing is secondary. I had a strap wrapped around my face, around my waist. It probably would have been better around my waist.
You have the girl strapped around your face. Now we're talking about a sport I could get.
Now we're talking, yeah.
Yes.
the skiing is kind of second nature. You just kind of do that. And the technical part is actually keeping the girl balanced. You got a 118-pound girl up in the air on one hand, flipping her around, and you have to do it right because nobody has the strength to actually do that without doing it correctly.
Oh my God! Wow! A water ski. I only have ever even spoken to or met a water skier in my life. Now, how come you chose that rather than surfing?
I grew up in Hawaii surfing,
Yes.
Probably helped the water skiing to get the balance issues and that sort of thing. But I grew up in Kailua, Hawaii.
Oh.
Ended up in the Midwest for high school and college.
Oh, you poor bastard. What was it like suddenly you were hit with a real winter?
That's right.
I mean, my gosh. We're talking with Mike Ball. He is, as we've said, a water skier who wasn't even on water skis half the time. Still do not understand that. He writes with a band called Dr. Mike and the Sea Monkeys, and you've got the column. Now, let me ask, how do you go from being just a writer who wants to write something to having a syndicated column?
Well, you got to write a bunch of stuff, and you got to make it funny, and you sell it to some papers, and then you enter the syndicate and selling it to other papers, I guess.
So how many newspapers are you in at the moment?
You know, I have no idea, and I'll tell you what, the way the world is going, probably I think about 80% of the papers that were carrying me 7 years ago don't even exist anymore.
I won't be surprised. That's the nature of the beast, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, so there's a lot of online, and at this point, you don't really know even where you are, and you don't even know when you're getting paid. I think a lot of stuff runs without getting paid.
Now, you also have compiled your writings into 3 books now, including Angels, Chimps, and Tater Mitts. What are Tater Mitts?
Tater Mitts are one of these Popiel things. I mean, I love the late Ron Popiel.
Oh, yes.
One of the geniuses of all time. Tater Mitts were these little gloves you put on, and they had like little abrasive, like fake diamonds, bonded to the palms. So you could take these things and really mess up a potato in about 3 seconds. Instead of taking 8 seconds to peel it,
you can properly. Do you still have a pair of Popiel Tater Mitts that you use?
I do have them somewhere. I don't actually use them on a regular basis, so I couldn't probably lay hands on them, but I do have them. I have all kinds of Ron Popiel things. The Pocket Fisherman.
Yes! In fact, I was so inspired by the Pocket Fisherman. By Ron.
It turns out it's for actually fishing, though. That's
Well, I did the Pocket Fisherman. It was a way that you could urinate without having to go to the bathroom.
I like it.
And, well, it was just, honestly, it didn't quite work. Basically, you just peed in your underpants, and that was it. I never really perfected that step of having it be better than just being in your underpants. That's why I'm still working on that step. But when I get it, I'll be a millionaire.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Everything's got a funnel.
So you also have written Banjos, Boats, and Butt Dialing. This is your most recent?
That is the most recent book, yes. Banjos, Boats, and Butt Dialing.
And Butt Dialing, I'm sure people know, but this is when you accidentally sit on your cell phone and you call somebody and then what?
Well, the most fun is when you get butt dialed. What kicked off this column was a friend of mine who, she likes to talk. I got a 45-minute voicemail from her.
Good vault.
It was fantastic. And it was rushing, and she's singing a medley from Rush.
Oh, God.
Fly by night. And she just made it through Fly by Night, and then I heard the flush. I was like, oh, okay. I get it. It was fantastic. She was singing in the car, and so I thought, you know, this is really a sign of our times.
Well, yes.
There was a time, if you remember, there was a time, you probably, you're much too young to remember this, but there was a time when dialing actually involved a dial.
Oh, yeah, you put your finger, 1, 8, you know,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. That was, touchstone was just phenomenal.
But now it's not even, people have what you call numbers programmed in where you hit one button and it already dials the telephone. So, wow.
Yeah, well, you just say, well, you don't even have to dial anymore. You just say, Siri, call home, and she dials Rome, and you get the Pope.
I've done that, actually.
Yeah.
I've drunk dialed the Pope. Well, the old one, the Nazi one, because I wanted to scream at him, but that's just me.
Now, the Pope is pretty good.
Are your books self-published, or are they published by a... who publishes your books?
Glendower Media.
Glendower?
Glendower.
Spell that, please.
Glendower.
Oh, Dower. Glendower. Uh-huh. I haven't heard of them. Do they normally do humor books and things like that?
Yes, they're a boutique publisher. They do mostly humor. Benchley, they do Benchley books. I have several Robert Benchley books. They also do some Motown. They've got a couple of books about the history of Motown.
Ah.
They have a book that they just, and they do some sports. They have a book by Denny McLean that just came out. I don't know if you remember Denny McLean, but he's the 30-game winning pitcher who has done 2 prison terms, I believe.
Oh, nice.
Now interesting guy.
You should write songs with him. You should go to his place and teach him how to write therapeutic songs.
That would be a good idea. A lot of harmonica. Nobody knows.
The trouble I see. And people can get all 3 of your books, by the way, at your website, whativelearnedsofar.com. There's no apostrophe in there, by the way. Whativelearnedsofar.com. Now, when they do these compilation books of yours, what print run do they do? How many do they make?
I don't know. I'd have to ask the publisher that. I really don't know.
Hmm. Because these days, a lot of the publishers are, okay, we'll make 10, and if 8 sell, we'll make 10 more. Do they work like that, or I don't even know, or do you even know?
Yeah, I don't even know. I just know sales are pretty good. The last book, and e-book sales are actually pretty good.
Of course, yeah.
It's a Kindle e-book. I don't know very much about that world at all, but they're really quite good. I have some e-books on my iPad, and I actually really like them as much as I love real books. So, e-book sales, we hit number 1 on Amazon and humor briefly in July.
Sweet! That is nice. Wow, number 1 on Amazon with the most recent, with Banjos, Boats, and Butt Dialing?
Yeah, it's something about putting a girl's butt on the cover of your books. It seems to help.
Works right. If they did that with the Torah, we would have so many conversions.
I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. Mike Ball here. He is a columnist and author. He is the winner of an Irma Bombeck Award for one of your columns, the column that opens, in fact, your most recent book, all about a little bicycle. Tell.
Yes. That actually opens my first book.
Sorry. Oops. That's the one I was reading. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's all right. Yeah, it was one of those moments where I gave my son's little bike away to the church rummage sale. And just looking at the thing, I hadn't seen it in years, and neither had he. We used it to hold garden hoses in the shed once he got his driver's license. But just thinking back to what this thing meant to him. And so it's just a little short column about that, and apparently it struck some chords with people.
Very nice. Very nice. And it won. Who are the people that you read that might have inspired you to become a humorous columnist? Did you read Irma Bombeck?
I did indeed, yeah. Irma, Art Buchwald, I think one of the most brilliant writers ever. Art could do humor, or could do politics without getting angry, which I can't really do. I don't do a lot of pot. I do a little bit, but, you know, basically, Bill O'Reilly called me a Nazi, so I take pot shots.
Wait, did you ever go on Bill O'Reilly?
I was never on his show. I was in a room. I was at a convention with him, National Society Newspaper Columnist Convention. And he actually, it wasn't just me. He called the group of us in the room. He was speaking to the group of us, and he called us all Nazis because we don't agree with him. It's like, really? Okay.
You mean he wasn't goofing? He wasn't just making a...
He wasn't goofing. No, he thinks we're Nazis. He thinks that the people who don't agree with him are Nazis. So, okay.
I mean, communists, I get. I mean, you were a commie hippie fag at one point.
Yeah.
But Nazi, that doesn't even make any remote sense.
Well, I think I'm a commie Nazi. I think that's the...
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's as contradictory as you can possibly get, actually. I mean, if you think about World War II, and I think about World War II all the time. By the way, did you also... What do you think of, let's say, Dave Barry or Roy Blount?
Yes, I actually have met Dave, and he's... Dave is... My style isn't a lot like Dave's. I think Dave is probably the funniest human being alive. I love that guy.
Well, besides me. But okay, yes.
Besides you, yeah. I'm sorry. Second to you. Dave is a brilliant, brilliant humorist. My style's a little different. My style really is more like... In fact, I've been called a male Irma Bombeck by several editors or reviewers before I got the Irma Bombeck Award, so it was really gratifying to me. I'm a little more... touchy-feely, a little more whatever you want to say it.
Hopefully not with those young incarcerated kids.
Yeah. No.
That's the Catholic coming out in the U.S.
But I'd be incarcerated.
But, okay, so, and also your thoughts on people like Garrison Keillor.
I think Garrison Keillor is wonderful. I was pissed off at him because he knocked me out of four or five newspapers when he started writing a column. I think he's the, I think Garrison Keillor is... the storyteller of the 20th century, and
whoa.
So far, storytelling has a long tradition in the world. I'm Irish, and in our heritage, the storyteller, the bard, wasn't necessarily a musician. He might just be a storyteller, or you use music to tell stories. In fact, folk music. Garrison Keillor is just a brilliant storyteller. He has the essence of the timing and the way to do it. I've read it. I don't like him as much when I read his stuff. You need to hear his voice. You need to hear the patterns and the things he does just harks back to the dawn of literature, as far as I'm concerned. He's wonderful.
He is pretty... I have to give that to him. He is pretty great, even though he, like you, is not Jewish. Are there a columnist or to a humorist person that we haven't heard of that you would recommend?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh.
Thank you.
Gosh, I'm sure there are, and I don't have any of their names right at my fingertips. It took me by surprise with that one.
Okay.
I've met a lot of people through the Irma Bombeck Society, and I'm not sure if that's the exact name of it, but there's an Irma Bombeck group. They're based in Dayton, Ohio, which is where she was from. There are a lot of fine humorists that are involved in that. You're going to get involved with a lot of them. I mean, the people that spring to mind, you would know Andy Borowitz and people like that. Art Buchwald, I think Art was, I keep coming back to him, I think he was one of the most brilliant humorists of all time.
What is your writing procedure? Do you write a column every week and then also have to do other writing on top of that?
Yes, I do some ghostwriting. I do some work for other people. I have a novel in process that should come out next spring. It'll be an interesting, a little bit of a departure, but it's not that much.
Your first novel?
It's the first novel, yes.
Whoa!
Yeah.
It's
surprisingly enough, fairly lighthearted. And I expect it during the first quarter next year. We'll see. We're still in some revisions and doing some stuff with it.
But is this for the same publisher?
It will be under Glendower, yes.
Good for them. Good for you. This is nice. Now, what do you do? Do you ever get writer's block? And if so, what do you do?
You know, I don't believe in writer's block. I think if you're a professional, you can't get pitcher's block or quarterback's block or whatever. I think you got to do what you got to do. Sometimes you're more productive on one thing or another. So what I do is I have three or four projects going.
Yep, that's the thing. You always have irons in the fire, as the phrase goes. Do you have a specific daily routine? Like, do you get up, make a cup of coffee, 2 hours, nobody disturbs you, and the rest of the day is yours? Or is it more malleable?
It's pretty malleable, although I do try to plan the days and based on the project and the priorities and the deadlines and the hangover and all that sort of thing. You sort of have to factor everything in.
Cool. And last little question. questions, some personal questions for Mike Ball, the author, the columnist. For example, you married? You got kids?
I am married. I have. I met my wife on a blind date, and I tell her every day. 38 years so far, so good.
Oh, McMuzzle, 38 years.
38 years.
You
yeah.
poor bastard. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. What does she do?
She runs a leather shop. She runs a 1960s style leather and jewelry shop.
Okay. Oh boy. All right. So let me get this straight. You're in juvenile prisons with young men in a touchy-feely way, and your wife makes leather. I'm getting a very different picture of Mike Ball right now, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you.
Ain't nearly that interesting, though.
And your children, I assume they're fully grown at this point.
I'm sorry, my son is 32 years old.
Awesome.
They just presented us with our first granddaughter, let's see, about 19 months ago, and turns out she's the most perfect child that ever was. Who knew?
Of course, who knew, of course. Are you a doting grandpa?
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I have another song, the grandpa song, that's one of those things when I do it. I can't wait to be a grandpa because I'm going to mess up your kids. I get a lot of confirmation from people in the audience on that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Is that song on your... actually, we were talking about the music and we played the colonoscopy. Do you have an album?
Yes, I do. It's called Meet the Sea Monkeys, and it includes Peter Madcat Ruth on about 8 of the 11... tracks. He's best, one of the best harmonica players in the world, literally. He's a phenomenal guy, Grammy Award winner. I'm just very lucky to have this guy.
Wow.
He is also a fairly frequent sea monkey. He pairs with us in concerts quite a bit when he can.
Now, can people get this record at your website? I see two different site names, oneivelearnedsofar.com and also learnedsofar.com seems
Same
to
thing.
Work. Same thing. So you go with the easier one because I'm lazy. LearnSoFar.com.
You can even use the acronym WILSF.com. That goes to the same place.
That's not as easy. Not for me. That's not intuitive. I'm sorry, Mike Ball. But people can get your three books and the CD at the LearnSoFar.com?
You know, the CD is self-published, and I'm not sure exactly how they would get that. We sell that mostly by hand at concerts, but I'll tell you what, if you get in touch with me, I'll get you a CD. I'll find a way to get it to you.
Now, that would be lovely. And to get in touch with Mike Ball, his email address is at, I hope you don't mind if I mention that, is on the website, so you can contact him directly for the music of the Sea Monkeys.
That is correct.
Wonderful. Mike Ball, it has been very, very fun. It has been the proverbial ball talking with you about writing, about music, about all sorts of fun things. Much continued success and good health and further delightful colonoscopies for you.
Rabbi, the pleasure was all mine.
Thank you.